Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you and welcome to Islam and Life with me Tariq Ramadan broadcasting from London. In today's show we ask the question, are the Muslim countries doing enough to help Somalia?
At least 3.7 million people, who are almost half of Somalia's population, need food and are in extreme need of immediate life-saving aid because of drought and years of conflict. The United Nations estimates that Somalia will need $300 million worth of food, medicine, and other supplies in order to deal with its crisis. Muslim nations, led by the Organization of the Islamic Conference, pledged $350 million to support famine-hit Somalia. Some Muslim countries are already contributing in helping the starving country. Iran has dispatched its 8th humanitarian aid convoy to Somalia. Turkey has also sent 3 planes carrying dozens of tons of food and medical supplies for Somalis during Ramadan. The Turkish Prime Minister urged rich Muslim countries to help, saying they bear some responsibility for the crisis, for ignoring the poverty in the country. To assess the actions of the Muslim countries in helping Somalia, this episode of Islam and Life asks, are the Muslim countries doing enough to help Somalia?
We have been hearing about what is happening in Somalia for years now. And before that, we are talking about conflicts, about drought, about catastrophes, and now we are facing this famine and a situation which is very bad. We heard about some countries which were at the forefront of this support towards the poor people in Somalia, but still the situation is very difficult, very bad for so many people over there, for women, for kids. It's difficult and it's a challenge, and the Muslim majority countries should be at the forefront, of course, not only because these are Muslims, but because it's a question of solidarity, and solidarity is at the heart of the Islamic message and the Islamic teaching for the Muslims as well as for the people of other faiths. So these are important dimensions in what is happening there, and we have to ask ourselves today, are the Muslim majority countries doing enough to help, and not only to help as to the consequences, but to deal with the causes of famine and the causes of such catastrophes? So to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Jahangir Malik, the UK Director of Islamic Relief, who also attended the meeting of the Organization of Islamic Conference in Istanbul. Thank you so much for being with us. You have been traveling there. You went 3 times in the region to see what is happening. You are chairing and the director of Islamic Relief in the UK, where the Muslims were quite aware of what was happening and is still happening over there. How do you assess the situation? What is really happening today in Somalia?
What is happening in Somalia, Professor Tariq, is a catastrophe and a crime against humanity. What I've witnessed and what we're witnessing over the last month to 2 months, which sadly I've had to witness myself in Mogadishu and further afield, is really a crime against humanity. It should not, under any circumstances, under any stretch of the imagination, be happening in the current 21st century, where we can globally connect, we can instant text message, we can have so many of life's satisfying, gratifying conveniences. People are dying from not having enough food and dying from starvation.
But once again,
alarming rates.
Yes, and this is the situation. We had this in Biafra before, during the 70s, and we thought it was over. Absolutely. The goal for the millennium was saying we want to get rid of poverty, and still here we are again. So when you are talking about crime against humanity, it means that what you mean, it's unacceptable. It's something which is, we have enough food in this world, and still it's happening in Somalia. So why is it happening? So why? Is it because the people are not helping? Is it the global order that is creating such a situation? Before we come to how the Muslim majority countries should react, let us get a sense of what do you think are the causes?
The Horn of Africa and East Africa is a drought-stricken region. So there are very challenging climatic occurrences happening. There hasn't been a functioning government in the whole of Somalia for the last 20 years. There has been conflict and war and the absence of stability. When you don't have stability, you don't have security, you can't have sustainable development. You can only have sporadic engagement from a humanitarian perspective, which doesn't give the environment for us to be able to deliver a more prosperous place and state, as it were. Kenya, Ethiopia, and the likes, which you were referring to, and we grew up in. I remember back in 1984, Islamic League started in 1984 as a response to the famine in Ethiopia. Our founder, Dr. Hani Albanna, was initiated this journey back then due to the response that was needed. So we're here now, 27 years later.
It's as if nothing has changed.
As if much has. Some of the region has been better able to cope, Kenya, Ethiopia, and the likes. Somalia, without the functioning, stable government, and it is warring faction and conflict, hasn't allowed the stability to be able to...
Even heard at the beginning that some political forces over there were preventing the people from getting food. This was it right?
And so there's all sorts of militia control, conflict and the likes that are preventing. There are a plethora of different complex, conflicting, challenging warring parties. And when you have warring parties, you know, humanitarian space is what's needed. And for that humanitarian space, you need some form of security. A lot of the international aid organizations are staying away from Somalia, are finding it, not willingly, but finding it impossible or very difficult, I should say, very difficult to operate on those.
So let me come to that point before we go to the Muslim majority countries. When we had this natural catastrophe with floods in Pakistan, the perception was at that time, oh, these people are... you know, Pakistan, close to the Taliban, Muslims, and the international community, so to speak, was not reacting the same way as they were reacting in Haiti, for example, which were very strong support straight away. Is it the same in Somalia? Because what you are referring to is exactly the same. What we heard coming from Somalia is militia, radical Islamists, so insecurity. It's insecurity, you are not going to help them the same way.
Yeah.
Was this the same scenario or is it different?
There is a political context.
Yeah.
Once you have this kind of political context, it keeps donors away, it frightens, and there is a tough talk that happens, and then there is a response is very, very poor. If you look at Pakistan's response, and the same now in Somalia response, if you look at the picture that we painted and are witnessing with our own eyes, the situation on the ground is absolutely horrific. After 15 years of traveling, you know, I've never seen the magnitude and scale of what the situation on the ground. The political context is very challenging, and our own British International Development Secretary called the response in Pakistan woefully inadequate by the international community, woefully inadequate for the 20 million that had been affected. And the same way here, it is woefully inadequate in Somalia as an international. The UN have put out an appeal of $2.4 billion and they've only received $1.4 billion. Somalia...
So once again, there is
a billion shortfall, you know, even from what they requested. And so there is nervousness, there is access issues, there is fear, there is a plethora of political context which has been put forward to say that, look, you know, Somalia... Everybody knows, I mean, it's a no-go area sort of thing.
But it's also quite important here, while we speak, to make it clear that the political context is also having as an impact the fact that we are supporting or not some people. So poverty and people being, you know, starving and being, in fact, killed out of all this reality and all this situation are the victims of something which is beyond the situation itself,
right.
A discourse on Muslims, yeah. radicals, and this, there is a connection here between political stand and economic realities
right.
and solidarity. And I think
Absolutely.
That it's quite important
Absolutely.
For the people to understand, be careful, because it might be because you are scared or afraid of Muslims or you know, this reality and this context that we leave let people dying because we are not ready to support them.
Absolutely. We're very concerned as a humanitarian aid agency that we don't want the politics of a situation stopping us from doing our humanitarian, humanistic, Islamic, faith-based, ethical responsibility of getting to those people who are in desperate need.
So this is exactly the point.
Yeah.
We might, even though it's not justifiable, we might understand why some Western citizens and Western countries are reluctant to be involved. Now, we are talking here about Muslim-majority countries and asking ourselves,
Absolutely.
Are we doing enough? You attended the conference in Istanbul.
That's correct.
What is your assessment? Now, if you have some figures, if by and large, what is happening coming from the Muslim-majority countries?
I think that the picture that I painted is that worldwide, there is a lack of response for humanitarian response. And partly contributing to that is the political climate in which that we're working in.
Yeah.
Secondly, is a local, regional, and international dimension to the area that we're working in.
Hmm.
The Muslim countries' response, as we saw in the piece earlier, was that the OIC has pledged $350 million of emergency response to the current crisis. Now, I think that we as an aid organization welcome the Muslim member states of the OIC in mobilizing its efforts. So I welcome the fact that this has now been mobilized, because largely giving has been dominated by the West and by European and
It is still the case. Which is just worrying.
You know, the $1.4 billion that the United Nations has received has been half a billion of that is from the United States, almost 200 million of that is from the United Kingdom. The British public through the DEC has given 57 million. So, you know, the Muslim, all 56 member states of the Muslim countries from the OIC have pledged 350 million, which I think is a good start, but it's
a start only.
It really needs to move much further than that because of the scale and the gravity of the need. So in conclusion is, the need isn't matched by the response at this moment in time.
And why? While we are talking exactly about this political context, the economic order, while even, for example, in the United States of America, they are dealing with a downturn, they are dealing with a crisis, they are even given more than all the Muslim-majority countries altogether. And why? Why is it? How can you explain that?
It's a challenging one to explain, but I think the reality is that let's split the giving up into two forms.
Yeah.
And this is what happens in Europe and in the Western world. That is what we call the British, the public giving and the government giving.
Yeah.
So government to government, or government giving and the public giving. And if you take Britain as an example, the public giving is 57 million through the DEC, voluntary giving. The Disasters Emergency
Crossing
Committee.
The board from
Crossing
all the
border. Yeah. Islamic Relief is a member of the Disasters Emergency Committee, 14 organizations, and it is a great tradition of the British public's generosity. We saw it in Pakistan, we saw it now in Somalia, we saw it in Haiti, and it continues of this generosity. Then there's the government giving. So we split the two together, we split the two up, and these are the forms. In the Muslim majority countries, I think that there is giving, but it is not in the manner in which that the Western governments and public have given. It's not organized. The British government give to the United Nations appeals, so it's transparent, it's clear. The British public give to the DEC, it's clear. And it's in the Muslim country giving, the transparency of giving isn't as clear, and so that people can value what's given. Having said that, I went to Somalia. I saw Qatar. I saw Turkish. I saw Kuwait.
International
Muslim organizations and countries.
Yeah.
The organizations and the countries moving from when I arrived in the first week to the third week, it's building momentum.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's too slow. That's my only my biggest criticism or challenge or frustration. It's too slow because of the scale.
But
of
it is frustrating, and the point is that if we come back to all what we are saying as Muslims about the Islamic teachings, about it's all about solidarity,
absolutely.
It's all about justice.
Absolutely.
It's not only to deal with the consequences, it's to deal with the causes and to try to reform the world for the better. Great speeches that we have coming from the Muslim majority countries. And when it comes to figures, we see that the West, which is richer than the great majority of the Muslim majority countries, but not all, we have petro-monarchies that have lots of money,
absolutely.
And still they are not making the difference. They are not showing how much they are involved. And more importantly, it's for all the people, yes, but in this situation, these are Muslims facing, you know, death and facing, you know, starvation. So, once again, what do you think, as you are working in the field of solidarity, what could be done
what
to change two things?
Okay.
First, the perception of the ordinary Muslims on the ground, and also the governments, and to push them to be more involved in the process.
I think I can only talk from my experience and what I've witnessed over the last 6 years since the OIC established a more developed humanitarian wing, as it were, of its operation. I've seen good progress over the last 6 years. I'm going to be absolutely frank about that. Okay, and so I think the Muslim giving vis-a-vis international development, solidarity and the likes is very late to come to the table.
It's late, but it's improving.
It's late, but it's improving.
Yeah.
The concept of philanthropy, giving, generosity, sadaqah, zakat, solidarity, all that, I think is deeply rooted as part of our cultural and Islamic teaching.
But still, we are giving much more to build mosques than to help people.
But from international development,
changing. And
we need to see that change.
Yeah.
And we need to see that supported by the government, and we need to see that help supported by the British public. I mean, I keep mentioning the British public, I'm sorry, but by the public at large.
Yeah, yeah.
So that we have two mechanisms of giving. What the government will take its responsibility to give and facilitate the public to give freely.
Hmm.
I'm not going to shy away from the fact that post 9/11 world, it's been very difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
Post 9/11 world, you know, Islamic agencies have come through a very difficult time of scrutiny, of lens, and of fear.
Yeah.
And I think this year, 2011, has been a symbolic year of we've broken through fear.
But yes, but
and so that's now needs to
yes,
needs
but that's
to
true
be
that we have to mention this because you are working. You are the director of Islamic Relief.
Correct.
Islamic Relief is quite protected from this because now it's quite clear you are trusted at the national level, at the United Nations. It's a trusted organization, and in the States or everywhere in the world. It's not the case for many Muslim organizations
Absolutely.
That are doing a very good
Absolutely.
Job on the ground,
Absolutely.
But still they are facing
Absolutely.
This suspicion. What are you doing
Absolutely.
With money? And the people who are giving money, with
yeah.
the new law in the States, if you give money to a suspicious organization, you can be jailed.
And
it's a very quick process. So I think that we also have to take this into account, which could explain why there is a resistance here.
We Islamic Relief experience has been through a mechanism of transparency, openness, and accountability based on the humanitarian principles of impartiality, neutrality, and respecting that we are a non-governmental organization, non-political organization focused. And that's one of the reasons why Islamic Relief is one of the few organizations that's able to operate in South and Central Somalia, which is Shabab held and militia run and all the rest of it. And our experience of the last 10 years has been to focus clearly on our mission of humanitarian mission, as it were, with those...
As a necessity. It's not always easy, but it's a necessity.
All the areas that we work from Kabul, Afghanistan, Gaza, you name it, are all in such political challenging situations. But sticking true to our core mission, which is the mandate that our supporters give us. Here's the money, whether it's zakat, sadaqah, charity, Muslim, non-Muslim, get it to the people in need.
Yeah.
And based on our core principles,
it's a duty of transparency.
Transparency has been the order of the day. Openness, transparency, nothing to hide. Islamic Relief, yes, faith-based confident humanitarian organization is what we are. And I'm sure many of our organizations in the Muslim world and the Arab world subscribe to similar principles of charity, solidarity, humanity. And these are the ones that need to be supported. And I've seen that growth through the Turkish organizations from Pakistan, in Haiti, now in Somalia, and I've seen that growth in some of the organizations in Qatar, Qatar Red Crescent, Qatar Charity, Qatar Foundation, and the likes. And I've seen
But I have one important question. You were mentioning, of course, we are 10 years after September the 11th. Have you seen, because just after September the 11th, it was very difficult for many organizations and even for the government, quite quickly, have you seen improvement in the way, you know, this security business and suspicion now is evolving? Are the Muslim organizations and even the government freer to give and to be involved in the solidarity work?
I think that I've definitely noticed an improvement.
Yeah.
But, you know, also, in the last 10 years, how many catastrophes have we had? The need has increased magnifold. Two major disasters just in 1 year. This time last year, we were inundated with the response needed for Pakistan. Now we've got this. So this response has to be quicker. The evolution has to be quicker to get to the need, because the need is growing at a faster pace. But it's welcoming to see the OIC and the member states moving in this direction. The OIC now has a presence in Mogadishu.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. I think it's quite important in our discussion to look at the causes and to look at the situation. While if we have to assess the figures, what is coming from the West is much more than what is coming from Muslim majority countries. And there are reasons for that. And the first one that we can mention is the last one that we mentioned right now is over the last 10 years after September 11, it was quite difficult not to be suspected and under suspicion because of solidarity work were connected to political activities and under scrutiny. And even the people who were giving were suspected. The situation is improving and the governments are doing better and more, and they are more improved. But you were mentioning two things that are important. The duty of transparency should be something which has an ethical stand for the Muslim governments and the Muslim organizations, and at the same time to keep this message from Islam that there is a duty of solidarity, not because of charity only, but because of justice. And justice is, with solidarity, the pillars of the message, and it's good for the Muslims to remember these dimensions. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programs, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Jahangir Malik. Thank you so much, not only for being here, but for all the work you have been doing on the ground with your organization and others to help the people who are facing, you know, poverty. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.